Good morning. I'd like to call House Special Committee on Fisheries meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, March 21st, and let the record reflect is 10:01 a.m. Today we have present Representative Stutes, Representative McCormick, myself, Chair Vance. I would like to remind committee members and those in the audience to please, someone's got to let their cell phone go off so we can have donuts. Everyone's playing so nice. One of these mornings, someone's going to have to bring in Louise.
Don't mention my name.
The staff assisting us today is Justin Hayes with House Records and Doug Bridges with the Juneau LIO. Thank you so much for your work. I'd like to let the record reflect that we've been joined by Representative Hemshoot. The committee will hear a presentation today on developing export markets for Alaska seafood by Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, otherwise known as ASME. So I would like to invite to the table Ms. Lindoff, if you could please join us at the table, state your name for the record, and begin your presentations. We do have 27 slides, which I have to say that I'm impressed with ASME is able to have so many slides and keep us engaged and get through. So I will allow this conversation to be at your discretion if you want to allow members to ask questions along the way. You let me know and we can proceed.
Great, thank you so much. So, Chairman Vance, for the record, my name is Hannah Lindoff, and thank you all for having me. And I am very open to taking questions as we go. And I will begin my presentation on export market development for Alaska seafood.
If you could just speak up a little bit more for the record so that everyone can hear you online who's watching.
Sure. So I think everybody here is familiar with ASME and our goal, which is to raise the economic value of the Alaska seafood resource. And I want to point out that we do this for the state of Alaska and for our resident fishermen and our fishing vessel owners. I've put in this slide a chart showing exports over the last decade. Because this is what my program is focused on, raising the value of Alaska seafood exports. As you can see, we did have a significant drop during the pandemic, but we are coming back up. And I just put in the numbers that I have for 2022, which is a $2.9 billion. So we're coming back up, which is good to see. I want to explain how we run our export program at ASME. We are primarily funded through a USDA Foreign Agricultural Service grant called the Market Access Program grant. And I put up just to show you what our MAP funding allocation is for 2023. And we are at the top of the list because this is alphabetical. So you can see the award that ASME was given, but this is a competitive grant process, and those are just the other commodities in the A's that we're competing against for market access program funding. And then this funding source needs to be matched at 55%. We also have the Agricultural Trade Promotion Program, also known as ATP funding. This was a one-time funding award that was announced in 2018 as a result of the trade war with China. And so the purpose of this funding is to help us diversify from the China market. And so that's really what I'm focused on in this presentation, is the work that we've done to diversify from China and build new markets using these funding sources. And then another funding source, which I don't have a table with comparative awards for, is the Emerging Markets Program. And that is a small grant that we can apply for on a case-to-case basis to do specific programs to outreach to emerging markets. And so not every market in the world would qualify, but we have used it several times.
So specifically, what's considered, is the location considered an emerging market or the product?
To the chair, it is based on the GDP of the country, so it's by location.
Thank you. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, what percentage of our exports were affected by the trade war.
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, that's a difficult question to answer because there was such a ripple effect of China was an almost $1 billion market for us. And so for certain products that only or primarily went to China, they might have seen a 50% decrease in value. Other products had a smaller amount that was displaced. But looking at the overall global market, our partners knew we got displaced and then that shrunk the value of our products. But some of those numbers that you see going down for exports aren't that we just totally lost value. We shifted a lot of our product to the United States market. So it wasn't that we lost that much value in our seafood, because ASME was actually able to respond and really ramp up efforts here in the U.S. where we weren't as affected.
Thank you. I'll hold it for a moment. Thank you.
So in response to that of shifting to the domestic market, how has that gone? I know that that's still relatively new. Has that been received favorably and is proving, has ASME made a decision to be consistent in the domestic market, or was that a temporary decision?
To the chair, thanks for the question. So I would say that we see a consistent interest from our boards and committees to continue to stay strong in the U.S. domestic market. It's difficult because we have been through a very extraordinary time, and so it's hard to say this is definitely the way that the market is shifting. During the pandemic, we saw a huge uplift in the U.S. market as people needed healthy protein, safe food, and because of shipping issues, the U.S. market was a stronger market for us. We also have a strong dollar right now. So again, the U.S. market is very strong. It's our number one market, and we are certainly shifting a lot of our efforts there. However, there are always going to be barriers to every market, and certainly the U.S. does not have high seafood consumption overall. We have done a wonderful job teaching people in the United States to eat salmon, halibut, cod, but there are other products that, I think the number one fish product in the U.S. market is still going to be shrimp. And overall, there's a love for beef and chicken that is hard to overcome when you look at the traditional preference for seafood in some of these other markets. We have an easier path. And I actually have some slides on that.
Wonderful. Please proceed.
So this slide, I think you've seen these numbers before, but this just shows what we're up against in the export market. So we are 61% of U.S. harvest or wild capture harvest, but we are a fraction of the global wild harvest and aquaculture production. And last year was actually the year that globally aquaculture production overtook wild capture production. So from here on out, we will be looking at becoming a smaller and smaller slice of that pie. And as a result, our job is to continue to find the high end of more markets, just because we need to differentiate ourselves in the global market.
I will have more questions regarding ASME and aquaculture later, but want to let you get to your slides.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is a slide that shows where Alaska seafood is exported around the world, our primary markets. However, I don't like to use that one. I choose this map because it puts Alaska where it belongs, in the center. And if you look at the arrows that I have here, I think it does help explain why the Asian markets are so important to us in terms of proximity and in terms of shipping. I've given purple arrows to our mature markets. So that's Japan, China, and much of Europe. I'm not going to talk about those in this presentation because this presentation is about building export markets. Some of these markets we've been in for, you know, a century, for example, if you look at the UK market. I have red arrows going to emerging markets that we are currently building for Alaska Seafood. And then I have a green arrow heading pointing at Morocco, which is a very, very new project that we've undertaken that I did not put any slides on, but I'm happy to take questions on that.
I'd like to let the record reflect that we've been joined by Representative McCabe. Any questions on this slide? Okay, please continue.
Thank you. So in terms of looking at exports and the importance of balancing both the U.S. market and export markets, I like to show some of the products that are 100% reliant on export markets. Well, Ikura, probably that's not true, but some of these products are just very unlikely to find a home in the U.S. palate. They might have a very sharp taste, or they might have a texture that we're unfamiliar with, or perhaps we could get people in the U.S. to eat them, but they wouldn't have the same cultural preference, for example, for sea cucumber that you find overseas, where it is a really high-value product. I mean, I would be happy to eat it, but I'm not going to pay hundreds of dollars. And if somebody else is, then that's where that product should go.
So now that you mention it, for the sea cucumber, what is the equivalent U.S. dollar that someone would pay in the market?
You know, it depends, because there's like a huge wide variety, but it wouldn't be unheard of for a very fancy special box to be, you know, $100, for a couple. If they're, you know, the right size and the right this, and, you know, they're hitting all the specs that I'm not even totally familiar with.
I would like to let the record reflect we've been joined by Representative Carpenter.
And I also put in these pictures just to show how flavor preference is different around the world. This Domino's is in Singapore, and they're advertising Mentaiko pizza. And I think, I don't know if you can see up on this leaf, that's spicy polygro on the pizza. And then this is McDonald's in Thailand. They also have a Mentaiko fish burger. So, you know, the path to expanding markets for Mentaiko seems very clearly Southeast Asia, and that is a much easier lift where they already appreciate those flavors than it would be in other markets. But when we look at emerging markets for Alaska Seafood, there are actually a lot of things to overcome. I've listed many of the constraints identified by our industry when we talk about going into new markets or developing new markets. And that is a big push for us right now as we diversify from China, which, as I said, was an over or nearly $1 billion market before the trade war. We are unlikely to ever find another, okay, here's another nearly billion-dollar market. We're looking at a lot of small markets to fill that gap. And in doing so, we face a lot of headwinds. There's, you know, a small company might not have the resources to go out and do this kind of exploration. And there are some headwinds that ASME really can't overcome, such as, you know, supply or shipping logistics, things like that. But where we try to help the industry in our market access efforts are by providing the resources, doing some of the research and laying the groundwork in these emerging markets so that one individual company doesn't have to do it themselves. Tariffs and trade barriers. We have had a lot of success in South America working on some of the trade barriers that we face. Less success with tariffs in other regions, but this is something that we continue to work on. We work on vetting companies for meetings, and so we can establish business ties and just generally providing knowledge. So there are a lot of constraints for opening new markets. We can't fix them all, but those are the four that we try to work on.
Please please continue.
So I'm going to take you through the story of how we have developed the market in Southeast Asia. This is a big push for us, and it's also a big opportunity for Alaska Seafood. We actually began working in this region in 2016. We were awarded $51,000 from the USDA Foreign Agricultural Service for an emerging markets program grant to bring a trade mission to Southeast Asia. We brought 8 trade members from different Alaska seafood companies to Indonesia, Thailand, and Vietnam. We did this all in 1 week, conducted seminars, retail tours, plant tours, and had one-on-one meetings between the seafood companies and trade members. And this, at the time, 2016, there were definitely exports going to this market, but it was very much a developing market. This is me pointing out, this is where Alaska is. We were giving really basic information to the industry. You know, this is what our fish look like, and this is what they taste like. We had inquiries for Alaskan lobster. So there was obviously a lot of education that had to be done during that time. So, but the interest was pretty high. So the next thing that we did, we actually joined forces with other U.S. seafood commodity promotion groups. Through the USDA, we did a project that's called the Global Broad-Based Initiative Project, and we worked with the Food Export Northeast, so that would be like Maine lobsters. We worked with the Southern United States Trade Association, the Western United States Trade Association, American Indian Agricultural Council, or Intertribal Agricultural Council, sorry. And we did, over 3 years, we did 3 more missions paid for by the USDA to, we went to Vietnam, Singapore, and Thailand. And then actually the USDA brought a mission here to Alaska with a program that they have called the Cochrane Mission. And then we were awarded the Agriculture Trade Promotion Program funding, and we were able to start an office in Bangkok. So now we have a program with an in-country representative located in Southeast Asia. This allows us to attend trade shows and do marketing activities there. I want to put a shout out for the Seafood Expo Asia, which will be happening in September of this year, and invite interested members to come. We have had legislative contingents come to shows in the past, and it's actually very helpful to show that we have that kind of support. So if you look now, these are promotions that we have going on. I just pulled from the last quarter, and these were some of the things that we had going on in Thailand and in Singapore. It's quite a difference from just trying to show them where Alaska is. We have a lot of Alaska seafood in the market. And the surprise with Thailand has been that they are taking quite a bit of a high-end product. It's not, you know, prior to our establishing this office and doing our trade missions, it was mainly a market where you saw a lot of canning happening. Now they've really taken to sockeye salmon, as you can see. So if we look at the year we first went on the trade mission, 2016, I think those numbers are maybe artificially low because it was a tough pink year. But if you look overall, we have pretty much doubled exports to Southeast Asia since 2016. And we're very proud of that, but we are not done yet. This was a mission that just took place last month. We took another mission to Vietnam. And many of the members who were on the original mission came on this one, and they said, wow, it's a lot different. When we went the first time, you know, they were talking about maybe they would buy salmon heads, and now there's a lot of investment in the sector, and a lot of potential. People walked away with sales right on the spot. So it's really great to see that kind of movement. And we have, it's a big region. We concentrate Thailand, Vietnam, Singapore, but we also include Malaysia, Indonesia, and the Philippines in that region in our grant. So plenty more to target. So that is, I'm going to switch gears to Latin America, but if you have any questions on Southeast Asia, I'd be happy to pause for questions. Okay, so we began our Latin America program a little over a decade ago with also using EMP funds to open the Brazil market. Today, we have actually a very vibrant program in Brazil. We have millions of followers on our social media. Brazil was always a good market for Alaska seafood because it was a traditional cod market, but today we see a huge influx of, you know, a variety of products into Brazil. One of the things that we did when we were granted ATP money is that we opened that region to other parts of Latin America so that we could look at the reprocessing sectors in Peru, Ecuador, Colombia, which then could feed the Brazilian market and other markets directly through the free trade agreement that they have. So, unfortunately, this is we had an abrupt disruption to exports to Peru. Just as we were looking at this market as a high potential for reprocessing, because they have a very large anchovetti fishery, rivals the pollock fishery here in Alaska for size, but they have a lot of capacity in the off season, and they were very interested in our products. But due to a non-tariff trade barrier, imports went to zero. So 2020, we have zero. And this is obviously a huge problem. So we took a trade mission down to Peru to introduce our seafood companies to this sector and look at the potential for processing, but also to meet with government officials and industry officials to show them we're serious, we're interested, but we can't work with the current restrictions. So, yes, this was early March 2020, which made it especially interesting. But we went down there. We toured processing plants. I included this picture of the people in the hard hats because that processing plant wasn't built now, but built at the time. It was under construction. They were showing us what it was going to be. The processing plant is now taking Alaska seafood. We met with the U.S. ambassador and with the former vice president of Peru, who was at the time the president of the sort of like the Food Producers Association. And they changed the law to allow our exports to come in under a provisional law. And we saw the next year up to $2.4 million of Alaska seafood exports heading in, which frankly, due to the pandemic situation and some of the shipping costs, was kind of miraculous. And last year, up to $3.4 million of Alaska seafood was heading to Peru for processing and further distribution throughout Latin America. And I think I know of at least four companies who are taking advantage of that. So it's a wide variety of products, which is always important. And while that is a much smaller number than what we see in Southeast Asia, This is just, you know, I'm showing you this because it was actually very hard. And it will, you know, that's kind of what it takes to build, to slowly put everything together and get everything in place. So I think you are all familiar also with the situation in Ukraine, and I am showing this label. This is from the donation that was made to Ukraine through the funding of the legislature last year, which we're extremely grateful for. We have had a program, a marketing program in Ukraine for quite a long time. At one point, it was Russia and Ukraine was our marketing program, and then we were embargoed from Russia, and we lost that $60 million row market basically overnight. Ukraine became our primary focus, And but we expanded that market to include Moldova, Georgia, Romania, Kazakhstan, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia. And now, but our primary focus was Ukraine. And we have a lot of close trade members there. So it was particularly devastating for us to see their facilities being bombed, you know, to see what's happening with them. And, of course, very difficult for Alaska seafood exports. If you look at what's happening, what happened with our exports last year, exports to Ukraine were not surprisingly down 71%. But what we saw was that largely the volume came back and has been displaced throughout the region, where the overall region is only down 20%. So we saw Romania, Georgia, Moldova, Lithuania in particular, and Estonia all grow in their exports as people have been displaced and companies have been displaced. The demand is still there. And one thing that we also see in Ukraine is there is a high demand for inexpensive protein. And so that has been really interesting for us because that has allowed us to talk a lot about lower grades of Polycro, which are very inexpensive and can be eaten as a spread, and then also just other Pollock products. And we do a lot of our outreach online now. And this is a chef who actually came to Alaska on an ASME trip, is now our chef ambassador, creating these low-cost, high-protein meals for people in Ukraine. But we continue, you know, our marketing focus in Eastern Europe, which is such an important market for Alaska salmon roe. It's really important that we have more than one market. We can't just have Japan, or they will understand that they have a monopoly and lower the price. We need to diversify. And so that's why we have small programs going in all these other countries. We had a Cochrane mission, so USDA brought a mission from Georgia here to Alaska last summer. And as a result, we saw this fall a promotion of Alaska salmon roe and Alaska halibut in Georgia. And I think that's a really good example of taking the top of that market. That's not going to be a big market, but it's important that we take the absolute premium spot in a market like Georgia. And then I'm showing this from Moldova. This came by way of Kodiak. This was spotted in the wild, some ASME bears. ASME board member Duncan Field's wife, Leslie, sent this to him, and he gave it to me. She was in Moldova and ran into some ASME bears at the caviar house, which just goes to show, yeah, you can't escape us. So those were all of the slides that I put together, but I'm happy to talk about other markets as well.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, I'm curious. I know that there is an embargo on Russian fish coming in. Has there been any attempt or any efforts made by ASME to work with our congressional delegation to keep the Russian fish that is being reprocessed in China and then sent over to the U.S. from coming over to the U.S.? Because it would seem if we could stop that influx of fish, that would increase the U.S. market as well.
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, I believe that there are people working that angle. It's complicated, but you're right. It would be very beneficial to stop, but also I think it's proving difficult for those who are working on it.
Follow up. I ask because I had an opportunity to speak with a couple of the processors who were explaining to me that it would be actually very easy to follow the origin of the fish, even though they're going through China before they come over here. And that, you know, like I said, it would just increase the U.S. market substantially, I would imagine. Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you for the presentation. It's hopeful that we have continued expanding new markets. And I find that interesting, the different ways that people enjoy our Alaskan seafood, and you know, would love to hear more about the different varieties of, like, I noticed the pollock pancakes was interesting, that, you know, we maybe wouldn't have considered. But Representative Carpenter.
I'm not sure that I would ever partake of pollock pancakes, but I can tell you that I remember, whether it was at Japan or Korea, but I saw the package on the shelf that said Alaska pink salmon and Spam, and they were packaged together. And I thought, no, I had never considered that either. Interesting marketing.
Surf and turf.
Surf and turf. Thank you. Thank you for the presentation.
You're welcome.
Any other further questions or comments? Well, thank you so much for what you do, and definitely I'm amazed every time I hear all that you do on a very limited budget and able to get the grants that you do, and definitely benefiting our fishermen. So that concludes our business for today. I do want to extend my apologies. I don't remember if I included Representative Hemshoot joining us shortly after 10 on attendance, but I want to clarify that for the record. The House Special Committee on Fisheries will meet again on Thursday, March 23rd at 10 a.m. to hear House Bill 95, National Resources Water Nomination Designation by Representative Rauscher, in its first hearing. Seeing there is no business, other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect. It's 10:33 a.m.